face, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're gonna make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no picks, action, jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Weber of the board. SP Futures down 5. NASDAQ Futures down 51. Dow Futures up 22. So kind of a slow mixed bag here this morning as the grains are up and as inflation seems to percolate through here a little bit. Matty, what's your story for the weekend on a raised price? I'm sure you came across one or two that were startling.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's across the board. I went to the liquor store on the corner store on Saturday morning to pick two things up because we were heading over to someone's house, and just for the convenience factor, I went there and I got a fifth of Tito's and a case of beer, and it was with tax and all in, it was $48. And
that's
a
number.
I was like, wow, that's a little more than I thought. Now, at if I would have went to Jewel or something like that, I assume it's $10 cheaper, but still, $48 even for the corner store seemed like a lot.
Of course, if you'd have got the case of beer at the Cub game, it'd have been how much?
Right.
Yeah.
But to be honest, Jill does the grocery shopping, so she would be the one you'd have to ask, because I never do it.
Did you know she had all these skills when you guys got married, or did you just luck out?
No, I knew.
Oh, I see. So the only job you have left is take out the garbage and walk the dog.
I take the garbage out. I walk the dog, although she walks the dog sometimes, too. And I do a lot around the house. I mean, I don't just sit on the couch. I mean, I clean and I fix things and whatever.
You fix things?
Yeah.
Do you have any tools?
I have tools, yeah. Minor things. I don't do, like, any major things, but minor things here.
Funny,
and there.
I never saw your toolbox.
I have two toolboxes, actually.
Uh-huh.
But she does, like, she likes to, that's like her time. She has a list and she likes to go shopping and has her two or three stores she goes to, and it's fine with me because I hate doing that stuff.
God, I used to take my mom every Saturday after we go to breakfast. She'd have a place with coupon. This place had a sale, and I'm like, oh God. But, anyway, but it was fun. I wish I could do it one more day. That's for sure. Hey, speaking of which, females, that is. This weekend, I went to a deal on Saturday night that Audrey, of course, dragged me to. And I tell you what, Manny, if it's one of those deals where you never generalize and always keep your eyeballs open, because people are going to open them for you if you don't. This was one of her friends. She's a terrific lady. She's a sommelier. You know what that is?
Yeah, she's a wine expert.
Oh, yeah. She's a... does all of, like, the fine wines for Southern Beverage and stuff. And, she's been to, well, she took the girls, four of them went out to Napa and Sonoma and went and toured all her big clients' places and, of course, were treated like, stars. And,
it's one of my favorite places, going out to Napa.
Well, I don't think you got to stay at the house on the land and were waited on hand and foot, guys coming over cooking you breakfast.
Probably not. Although you can do that.
Oh, yeah.
They have bed and breakfast right on the vineyards that you can pay up for. But we usually stay in San Francisco for 3 days and then go to Napa for 1 day. And we've
done that
5 years in a row until COVID.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's nice. I've been to probably 25 vineyards out there. And you never have to go to the same one twice. There's like 300.
Well, I went to when Pete got married, Jan's bro. Well, Pete, he has his own name. He's not just John's bro. They got married in Napa at the Chimney Rock Winery. So
I've been to Chimney Rock.
It's nice. But wine's
very
good,
nice.
Isn't it?
Wine's great. I have some in my house.
It's a little pricey. But
it's not cheap, but it's damn good.
They used to only serve restaurants. You couldn't even buy it.
Yeah, we, of course, when you go to Napa, you have to pay for the tasting. But if you buy a bottle of wine, they waive the tasting fee. So, they're charging $25 a person for the tasting fee. So when you buy the $100 bottle of wine, you figure, well, I guess it's really a $50 bottle of wine.
Yeah,
of course it isn't. But then you got to ship it back, which is a pain.
I found the stuff more expensive at the winery than the store.
Oh, of course. Yes.
But I mean, their stuff.
Yeah. It's weird.
Which is weird.
Yeah. I have a couple bottles of Chimney Rock at my house right now.
Well, they had a couple places where, I don't know, but the olive oil was there, the whatever they were eating, all the vegetables were there, even the cow was raised there, the steer, the chickens, everything was totally holistic, and I guess it was pretty good. I mean, why not? I mean, do everything yourself. Anyway, so we go to this place in Forest Park, and I'm sitting there, of course, I'm driving the ladies, and which is fine, and the last thing you want is Audrey driving. Even though today is her birthday, so I have to be nice to her. And yesterday was D-Day, for people who had some people left of Normandy, but there's not very many guys left that were that did Normandy. Anyway, so we go to this thing in Forest Park. Manny, it is, talk about out of the bowels of history. It's one of these kind of VFW, what's the other one now, Foreign Legion places, with the bar downstairs and the room upstairs you can rent. I'm thinking, how many bazillion small weddings and graduations and stuff were in this place? You know, with the kitchen where you could cook there if you had to, the folding chairs that are way older than me, and that will last forever, you know, the metal ones. So these ladies had gone to like 4 or 5 countries to do good, women, mostly black, a couple of white, most of them were black, and they ended up with a little thing in Uganda of all places. And I didn't get a chance to ask questions. I mean, they were running a film and so forth, but I'd love to have one of them on the show if they'll come. I think it's called Saving Grace, but I'm not positive. And the stuff they were going through about teaching and doing stuff for people, first they did was they got enough money to buy a farm. I don't know how big it is, but they had showed all these ladies, you know, working the farm. So they're growing their own stuff, decent stuff. And they get some tourists there, so they taught, they have classes in the baskets that part of the world, I guess, makes. This is all new to me, right? Well, they were teaching people how to make them, like, really nice so they could charge the tourists more and actually make some dough on them, which makes sense, making their own clothes. But I am just stunned at the things that we take advantage of here, or take advantage, we take for granted, and all we do is argue with each other here, that nobody else, you know, has at all. I mean, they're trying to teach the younger girls how to... One thing's for sure, no matter how big of a bleep hole anywhere in the world you are, the women are in worse shape than the guys. I mean, it's just, you know, it is scary how the women are treated, even though the place, everybody's kind of in bad shape. Well, how can I say this delicately? The young girls, even if you can find a spot to put them in school to learn, they all want to learn English, right? Because they want to be able to get on the internet, and they want to be able, because that's the language. I mean, I can get anywhere speaking Ugandan, I guess. But then they figured out after a couple of years, it doesn't do any good to teach little girls. Now they have 40 of the mothers. They're going back in like a month or two. They have 40 of the mothers enrolled for class. But get a load of this. If you're a young girl, if you manage to get yourself in some kind of school, how can an old Southside guy put this delicately? They don't have any, I'll use the term, girl stuff. So when they get old enough to where they have their time of the month, they have to take the whole week off of school.
Jesus.
Yeah. So one of the things they do is they bring over, there's a company that'll put together a, you know, a package to get you through the week. God, where's Audrey when I need her, right? And for like $1 or $1.50 a package, you know, so at least the girls can go to school that week and not have to take the week off because it's their time of the month. I mean, for God's sake, I mean, I thought we were past that 100 years ago, you know, type of thing. And it's just really, really tough for everybody. One lady was a nurse, and they have somebody come by the village like once a month. So if you get sick the day after the nurse leaves, you gotta hang in there for 29 days before you see somebody. And it's just, I mean, there's really, we should all stop arguing. There's a lot of stuff to do in this world. I mean, and I just, you know, I'm sitting there listening to this. I mean, here I was, you know, kind of pissed that I had to go do something like this on a Saturday night. And you know what? I was so impressed. Let's put it this way. I got a whole bunch of bottles of wine I didn't need at the silent auction. And Audrey gave some cash. And her friend Nancy, who's been on the show with us, she's such a nice lady and really, really, really bright. She's got this bottle of champagne she bought. we have to have a little party for Audrey's birthday tonight out in the burbs. And I hope she has a bunch of people. This bottle is bigger than you, man. But you know what? And the lady who put it together, Di, the lady who's a sommelier, I'll bet everything everybody bought, I mean, I don't know how much she paid for this stuff, but I'm going to say the stuff that she said was valued at $200 was really like $350. I mean, I think I paid, what did I pay, $180 for this basket of wines. For God's sake, there's three bottles of Dom in there, or three bottles of, I mean, serious champagne. I mean,
yeah,
it definitely was, because the people there didn't have that much, money, you know, so I made sure I bid up a bunch of stuff, so at least I bid some guys up, and got a couple things, but we were hauling all this stuff out. But, you know, I never dreamed that you know, I would be so impressed on a Saturday night when I'm all grumping and not even wanting to go type of thing. And, you know, you got to keep your eyes open. And there's time to, you know what, there are people doing some really good stuff in this world. And for everybody who says, you know, looks at black people and says, you know, you got to fix your people and do this stuff, you know what, there's a lot of people that are. You know, I mean, you can't ever generalize. I mean, you just got to keep telling yourself that. You can't generalize because it really is not right, and plus it's wrong. I mean, it's just flat out wrong because there are people doing stuff.
Absolutely.
I just, you know, I mean, you wouldn't want, let's put it this way. They said for the few guys that were there, if you get bored, make your bids and go downstairs to the bar to Cub games on. So if you were there, we'd have been down in the bar, but still we'd have made our bids probably.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, anyway, it was fun. And,
where was it at?
Forest Park.
Okay.
Some middle of some neighborhood. You know, there's this VFW or where it didn't say what it was, but just had the number on it. So I don't know what that is. It didn't say, you know, Legion something something or VFW something. They usually do. This just had the number. And with the, speaking of, other things that were bizarre, I did some, I shouldn't be telling everybody about my weekend, but some of the stuff is interesting. Remember last week we were talking about, a little bit about the GI Bill? I don't know why we were doing that, but one day we were. So, of course, I still was totally, I told everybody the story about my uncle's Purple Heart. I'm not going to go into that again, but I still was kind of stunned about how he was buried in 1948 and he died in 1945 over in Germany and was buried here in 48. So I'm looking around, can't find the answer. So what am I to do to find the answer to something like this, Manny? And you'll know the answer to this.
Of course, you asked Lou.
I asked Lou.
Yeah.
I called Lou. I'm driving in the car.
Military expert.
I called Lou and I go, what's going on with this? And he goes, well, first of all, you know why people have two dog tags? And I said, I have no idea. That's so if you die, they can throw you into a grave with one of the dog tags there and take the other one so they know where you are.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all. And then he went on to say, what they did is if people died at some spot, they throw them into a grave, kept with the dog tag on and took the rest so they marked where they were all buried. And then over the next few years, he goes, mostly these squads of people were all women. And they would go and open up this grave because nobody's been bombed or anything. They're all just in there. And they match up the dog tags and essentially drag the body. What kind of
Jesus.
Duty, what kind of duty is that? He goes, yeah, it was mostly all women. Now, mind you, I don't think any women qualified for the GI Bill, which really, really sucks. If that's your
Makes
job.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, if that was your job. It's like, and he goes, yeah, and then they would notify the family and say, we found the body. By the way, would you like us to bury it here? Because there's all kinds of U.S. military cemeteries over there. And if there was a family, if they cared, or we'll ship the body back to you and you can bury it, you know, with the family here. And at no charge to you. I guess you got to pay for the funeral. But so they must have elected to send the body back. And it's only 1948, 3.5 years later, to bury the poor guy. I had no idea that that's the way they did it. I didn't know that how can I hang in here this long, supposedly a bright guy, and not know stuff like this? I mean, this is all part of our history, and to not have these people. So then, of course, I dig into the GI Bill, which, you know, that's me, right? And the interesting part is that, you know, this is more of a discussion for another day, but maybe when Lou's on. The GI Bill, it turns out, it didn't supersede any of the Jim Crow laws. So even though all the black soldiers were essentially eligible for a college education, it didn't supersede any stupid university in the South that wouldn't let black people in. Which is, you know, I guess it's a different law. I don't know. I'm not going to criticize, but the effect is pretty screwed up.
Yep.
So what percentage of, you know, white guys took advantage of it? It was like, you know, a fifth of that or a tenth of that of black guys. And evidently there were mortgage help in there as well. Plus there was unemployment. when you first came back, it wasn't just, I thought it was just college. It's not. It was a, it was like a year's worth of unemployment when you got back, and it was a, and it was a little break on the mortgage. Well, of course, it didn't allow any black guys to move in any neighborhoods they weren't allowed. So what good was the mortgage help, right? I mean, you know, really, kind of sucked. I mean, and no women, and it ended up, well, it didn't preclude black guys, but it, because wherever, I mean, if you're a black guy in Chicago, you probably were fine. You know, you could go to a school here, and they let you in, which is mighty nice of them, but down there, I mean, you know, these are details I would never have thought of, Matty. I mean, would you?
I mean, I think I had read about this type of, unfairness, I guess is the word, but yeah, it's just mind-boggling to think about, in effect, that it wasn't that long ago.
No, I mean,
like you said, a lot of those guys are dying now, the World War II guys, but still, not that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's, anyway, it was an educational weekend, so that part was good, and I'm glad the Cubs, speaking of weekends, we gotta go through, we got, not just you and me, you gotta go through all this stuff, basketball and hockey and everybody. Well, I heard Canada agreed to some plan to get their Canadian people down here to play hockey. What was that? Do you have any idea? What's the
deal? No, I'd have to look that up. Yeah, I did see that the Montreal Canadiens, who were predicted to get swept in the first round by Toronto or at least lose in five or six games, ended up beating Toronto in seven, and now they're up 2-0 in their second round series. I'm like, okay, that's hockey for you.
Well, the next round has to...
The seeding couldn't matter less. It's all, if you have the hot goalie, who's playing well, the luck of the bounce, and you can win the whole thing.
But they're all, it's not so obvious, man, if you watch the number one, number eight team in hockey. It's not obvious that the eighth team doesn't belong on the ice.
Agreed.
Probably the first two lines do. They just don't have the depth. I mean, this year, if you watch the Hawks' number one line was probably as good as anybody's. And then the second line, maybe even in the third line, got mashed.
Yep.
Right? So...
Yep.
But I mean, with basketball, somebody's 1-8, you wonder, God, are they playing, you know, Jerry's kids or what? I mean, it's so uneven.
Yeah, it is. It is uneven in basketball, and that's why I think the 8 seeds only beat the 1 seed maybe two or three times in the history of the NBA playoffs.
Who was favored in the Mavs-Clippers series?
The Clippers, and they ended up winning yesterday in Game 7. But they were down 0-2 in that series, losing the first two games at home. And then they came back and won four of the next five, including three games in Dallas.
Well, the dude made what he had 100. He had 40 some points last night. And he lost Doncic.
Yeah, yeah. And man, he's a special player. But yeah, the Clippers were favored in that series, and they ultimately came out and kind of blew him out in Game 7.
All right, how come we can't get any U.S. black guys in baseball, and we can't get U.S. white guys in basketball?
It's a good question. I think, I mean, there are certainly some white Americans in the NBA, but there's not many. There's haven't been many good enough. Baseball is different. I think there's plenty of black athletes that are good enough to play baseball, but they choose not to play baseball now. They're mostly focused on football and basketball, and that's a big problem for baseball. I think.
I do too.
Especially when you go back not that long ago, and then 70s, 80s, and 90s, there's a lot of really good black players, and even before that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Kansas City Monarchs were real good too.
Well, I'm talking about the major leagues after they integrated, still, and that's really disappointing. I do think you know the fact that there's, there's a lot of white people in the NBA, but the reason why it's shifted more so toward Europe, I think, is the style of play. For whatever reason, in Europe, they're training guys to be very skilled at a young age, and they're essentially put into these basketball clubs, similar to what they do in soccer. There's no focus on high school or college. You have tutors, and you're basically playing basketball professionally from like age 14. And it makes these guys so much better. So, you know, they're still the 6'10 guy, 6'11 guy, 7 foot guy in a lot of cases. Doncic is sort of a 6'7 point guard hybrid type guy. But they have such great skills. They can all shoot from the outside. They can all pass. They all know how to move without the ball.
Well, there's areas in Europe that just have a lot of really big people too.
That too. But the difference is in America, for whatever reason, the tall, skilled white guys, just their skills aren't the same as the European players.
And that kid has amazing footwork. And he's quick for that size. You don't see too many people here like that.
Yeah, it's true. Well, he's sort of a once in a generational talent. I mean, he's going to go
down. The guy in the Bulls is almost the same. The center.
Oh yeah, Vucevic. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Jokic for the Nuggets, and there's a lot of these guys. But the American born center, whether you're white or black, for whatever, has nowhere near that skill set. They're just not trained to do it. They're trained here to stand on the block and to sort of power through guys and to kind of finish left hand, right hand. Whereas in Europe, they're taught to handle the ball. They're taught to pass. They're taught to shoot the three. They have amazing footwork. They can finish with both hands. And they're very skilled. Now, we play much better defense here in America.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Europeans.
Well, we used to.
Well, still, even still. Yeah. Come playoff time,
you're not talking about the guy in the Bulls, their star.
No, but the European guys are not known for playing defense.
Well, my buddy, I haven't seen him in ages. With the COVID, you haven't seen anybody. What's his first name? Zabushka or something? Nebushka. Neb. He played for the Serbian national team. The guy's as big as any like old tackle, and not when they beef up to play. He's a huge man. I mean, God, the guy's. Well, when I was 6'4", he's 2 inches taller than me, and he's wider than the room. I mean, he's sit there going, if the two of us go up for a rebound, I'll be lucky to be in the fourth row. I mean, they're just big people. I mean, this kid, what is he, 23 years old? He looks like a man. A guy in Dallas.
Yeah, Doncic.
And, I mean, they're big. The guy in, who else is, the guy in Milwaukee, right? What's his name?
Giannis.
Yeah.
Well, Doncic is listed at 6'7". I'm going to try to find his weight. He's only 22. He turned 22 in February. And the numbers he's putting up are just uncanny. I mean, he's having playoff games where he's 40 points, you know, 12-plus assists, 8-plus rebounds, games like that consistently in the playoffs at 22 years old. It's just we haven't really seen anything like that.
I will bet you that even though he probably went to some clubs and stuff, just by doing grammar school over there and maybe some high school and getting some tutors, I would probably match him up on any kind of academic test against just about anybody else in the NBA, white or black.
Agreed. He's no dummy.
No. I would say, in terms of world history, in terms of economics, I'll take him against anybody.
But 6'7", 230 at point guard. Outside of Magic Johnson, have we ever seen that?
Well, Magic was, yeah, he was same, almost same size.
I mean, yeah.
Magic's a huge man.
Huge man, yes. And this guy is a modern Magic Johnson, except he can shoot from the outside, and Magic never could.
Well,
granted, different era. If Magic played today, he probably would have had an outside shot. But
well, George Gervin was somewhat like that, right?
But he wasn't really a point guard, though, was he?
I
mean,
I think he was.
He kind of was. Yeah, I just think of him more of as a scoring guard.
Remember his greatest line? The thing I could do was the finger roll.
Yes.
You know where he came from?
Where was he?
He was playgrounds of Chicago, and Johnny Kerr said, "You're good enough to play in the NBA. What are you doing on this playground?"
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Johnny, I don't know if he was from, he must have gone to high school here somewhere. And Johnny said, "What are you doing?" Imagine that guy standing out on a playground, for God's sake. So what are we doing in baseball before we get Johnny in? I was watching this is the first, of course, these guys have nothing but stats. You, Mr. Stat Guy. By the way, you stat guys were taking some heat from A-Rod last night about it's a game of people. I don't care what the stats are. You got to get them on, get them over, and get them in.
Well, he's right about that, and the stats just track that, how well you're doing it.
Well, evidently I think Boston won last night. I didn't make it through the 10th inning, but they were up 6-4 in the 10th. But let's assume they won.
They did win, yes.
Well, it's the first time, like, in I don't know how long, that somebody has lost 11 games at a place in a row like they have in Yankee Stadium, and in the next series they swept it.
Wow.
It's like never happened before.
Yeah. Yeah.
They lost the last 2 years. They lost all their games in Yankee Stadium.
It's crazy. Yeah, who would have thought? The Yankees have lost 4 in a row now and 8 of their last 10, and they are 31-29, so 2 games above 500, but they're in the toughest division in baseball. They're in 4th place in the AL East. At 2 games over, and they're already 6.5 back of Tampa Bay and 5.5 back of Boston.
Well, did you YouTube the strike call at the bottom of the 9th inning? Did you see that?
I did not.
Oh, God. The Yankees are coming back. They score one run. They were down 4-3 going to the bottom of the 9th. They score one. They got the bags loaded, 3-2 count. The guy throws a pitch that's got to be, I mean, it's in the other batter's box. It's
oh, my God.
It's a solid 6 inches outside. And the guy calls strike three instead of the winning run coming home.
Did they flip out?
Oh, they went nuts. They threw somebody out, and some guy was yelling in the dugout, and then the second base umpire, who was a crew chief, he throws another guy out. And then they make the routine about, they start doing the I'm Spartacus thing. They all said that they had said it. Whatever it was said. So then the manager comes out with this look, well, okay, who are we going out? And then the second base umpire, he was having no part of this, but he was protecting the home plate umpire. So sure enough, in the top of the 10th, the Yankee pitcher throws a couple like that were borderline, and they both get called balls. So now the bench is really erupted, and you can see this big black guy, and he's the hitting coach. I don't know, I couldn't recognize him. You can tell him, he's lobbing the F bomb at the second base umpire like there's no tomorrow, just pointing at him. Let's put it, he should have had a mask on.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Yankees were they're in a ton of hurt.
Well, after the break, we'll get into the standings because another week has passed and the Cubs and Sox are still in first place.
The Cubs, it was a big game yesterday. They couldn't go into San Diego with losing four in a row.
No, that was a tough series. Their lack of depth and their lack of healthy players was really showing through this series in San Francisco against a really good team. But that was a big win yesterday, especially when they were down 3-1 early.
Oh, and if the Sox put the rookie back in center field, which I think they have to, I'd take Adam Engel on the Cubs anytime.
He's a really solid utility outfielder guy, and I think he can play some second base too.
Well, you know, speaking of utility, I don't. I think we were doing the show at the time, but I found some YouTube thing. It was a guy. There was this. You know, now they got this flexibility where Bryant plays all these different positions and stuff, and everybody thinks this is really cool. Well, obviously it is, but there was a guy who was he was a second baseman. He just broke into this team, and he's starting at second base. So all of a sudden, a couple of guys go down to the outfield, and he says to one of the veterans on the team, he goes, maybe I should go tell the manager that I played high school, I was outfield the whole time, I could play outfield fine. And the guy looked at him and said, if you go on the outfield one time, you'll be branded as a utility player your entire career, and you'll lose your second base job.
Now that's times have changed completely.
Well, it's changed because they had an extra pitcher or two in a round.
Well, I know, but I mean, look at Chris Bryant. Guy doesn't play the same position two games in a row. And he's a top three player in the game.
Right, but I mean, I'm saying most of the time, the point was you lose your regular spot.
Yeah, yeah, that was true for 100 years. I think the game's changed now.
I could have the SP futures down 2, and NASDAQ futures down 25. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down $1.75. We're quiet this morning. NASDAQ futures down 24. We have the Dow futures up 35. Away review on Friday. Dow was up 179, S&P was up 37, NASDAQ was up 199. So we're near a record in the S&P. So we'll see if we get there. We seem to be moving upward a little bit here, and the bonds, for whatever reason, are going up. Interest rates are, if anything, going down, which is kind of surprising since it's, inflation is all over the place. We're going to get another inflation number this week. I don't know what's going to happen if we get two crummy ones in a row. We'll see. Maybe we won't see. Maybe it'll bounce back down. DAX up 28.2%. FTSE up 20.2%. CAC around up 22.3%. So up but muted over in Europe as well. Nikkei up 77.3%. Shanghai up 7.2%. Hang Seng down 130.4%. Again, kind of muted there and mixed. Bonds 1.57. So that's positive one basis point. 1.579. Bund minus 0.19. They made a move towards zero and then come flying right the other way. Japan, a positive 0.07. UK, positive 0.81. Oil, down 21 cents, under 70 here. 69.41. Brent still over 70 at 71.62. That's down 27 cents. Natural gas down a penny, 308. RBUB down a penny, 220. Man, you know, this 335 a gallon versus like 235 is a big difference in the Suburban needs a 42-gallon drink.
Sure.
It's a lot of dough. Gold down $3 at 1888. Silver down 18 cents, 2771. Copper down 4 cents, but still 448. Platinum up 270, 1,167, whatever we trades at. We got Bitcoin up 691 at 36,478. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start here on the Edens and Kennedy. No issues on the Eisenhower or Stevenson. Traffic starting to build, but no accidents. Same for the Southside Expressways. Lakeshore Drive's looking good in both directions. Out west on the Eisenhower at St. Charles Road, that exit ramp is closed until 3 p.m. this afternoon, they're saying, due to last week's accident involving a semi that really tore up that area. But apparently that's going to be reopened this afternoon, but that's closed for this morning's rush. And then down south near the Indiana border on 8094 on the eastbound side at Torrance, that exit ramp is closed until the end of June, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown in that area. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, much cooler than it was this weekend. After a few straight days in the 90s, we're back into the upper 70s, but rain in the forecast today and tomorrow. A high of 77 today with thunderstorms in the area. Right now it's cloudy and 71. Still dry, but could rain at any moment. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, White Sox shut out the Tigers yesterday, winning 3-0. Cubs beat the Giants 4-3, salvaging the final game of their four-game set in San Francisco. Diamondbacks were swept by the Brewers. They lost 2-0. So as we take our Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings, White Sox starting to pull away in the AL Central, which is not a great division, although Cleveland and Kansas City are hanging around. Sox are 36-23. They're four games up on Cleveland and six games up on third place Kansas City. Cubs are tied in first place now as the Brewers have won 9 of their last 10, including 4 in a row after sweeping Arizona. But the Cubs still tied after winning yesterday, 33-26. That's tied for first place in the NL Central with the Brewers, 2.5 up on St. Louis and 4 up on the surging Cincinnati Reds, who have won 4 in a row and 7 out of 10. And the Diamondbacks are the worst team in baseball, officially. They're 20-41. Last place in the NL West, they're already 18 games back, Chief, first week of June.
Well, if you're the crummiest team, the last thing you want to do is be in the best division.
Right. That's true.
What are we doing on the basketball and the... I've lost some track of basketball and hockey so much because our guys are not in it, but I've watched a couple of these hockey games. They're pretty good hockey.
Of course, playoff hockey's the best. I just can't watch it unless the Blackhawks are in it. I don't have any interest in the other teams. But Vegas is tied with Colorado at 2 games apiece, it looks like. Montreal, as I mentioned, they're now up 3-0 on Winnipeg. So they somehow beat Toronto when no one thought they had a chance to beat Toronto. They beat them in 7. And now it looks like they're on their way to sweeping the Winnipeg Jets, and they're going to end up in the conference finals. So that's on one side there.
Well, I wonder if if she's still around and singing I won't say the fat lady now, but the lady who sings the O Canada for Montreal.
Yeah,
is she something special or what? There isn't a dry eye in the place.
Yeah, that's true. Bruins and Islanders is a big game in the East. That series is tied at two games apiece in the second round. So game 5 is tonight. So that'll be a big one at Tripoli.
Yeah,
because whoever wins that's going to have they're going to be in the driver's seat to win that series. And then you have the other game or other series is Carolina versus Tampa, and it looks like Tampa leads that series 3-1.
Yeah, I think I've watched her. She's an opera singer, I think.
She's definitely an opera singer.
Yeah, she's like listening to this guy the Hawks have. Who do you like better, this guy or the guy before him?
I don't know.
The Hawks national anthem.
I mean, do they have a new guy?
Well, the guy that got shot, he's been retired for a while. He went and did the. Remember, he went.
You're talking about Wayne Mesmer?
Yeah, he went and did the games for the team in that plays in
The Wolves.
The Wolves, and then the Hawks fired him. You remember that?
Yeah, Wayne Mesmer. Yeah, but I always associated him with the Cubs. He always did the Cubs.
No, he was a Hawk guy forever.
He was the Hawk guy. You're right, but I just didn't
follow
the
Hawks.
He
was the first guy where they cheered through the whole thing and the whole bit.
Yeah, I think the new guy is better for the Hawks that specific thing with cheering through the anthem and the because he's got the true opera voice. Wayne Mesmer does a great national anthem, absolutely. And still does the Cubs.
Well, not as good since he got shot the one night.
That's true. He used to do the Sunday Cubs games with his wife. He might still do that.
Yeah.
Sing duet.
Yeah, they're... she's got the whole place tearing up there in Montreal. You know, the place I've seen anything like that is... Have you ever gone to an Ohio State game? When they come out and sing Ohio, the whole place is tearing up.
It's weird.
It's so weird. I mean, as bad as people think Notre Dame is, it's nowhere near the same. But this is the state of Ohio against the world, and Nebraska's got to be close.
Oh, I'm sure. They have some dumb tradition that no one knows about.
Well, they also have no professional teams.
Right.
I mean, that's their shtick. I mean,
yeah. That's why they can't stand that they haven't been relevant in 20-plus years.
Oh, I know. It's awful. John, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. I mean, doing all right. Just learning as I go. I'm looking here at the because all I did was drive. I was driving around this weekend. Aaron's here. Aaron's there. And all I kept hearing about was this yesterday. This shooting in Cottage Grove. 86 people got shot at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
I tell you what. If you're not hanging in the suburbs much, but I do on weekends, and you hear people talking out there about how they're never coming back to this place, and it has nothing to do with the economy of it. They don't the ladies, especially the ladies that are delivering are working for the beverage places and stuff. I mean, they're still doing the job here, but they are not happy, and they've got nephews and people calling them up and say, what are you doing still going down to the city at night? I mean, what's the matter with you? Some of the people are saying that the carjackings are worse than they are, and blah blah blah. Somewhere along the line, our mayor better get control of this or she's going to lose this city. I mean, it's going to overpower the economics like there's no tomorrow. And I hate to see that happen because I never went anywhere. I love the place. But Jan, when they're pushing it.
I agree. I'm with you, Tom. I mean, and I think, you know, I feel bad for David Brown, the police superintendent, who I think is a good guy for the job. I think he's been hamstrung by Lightfoot and people that support Lightfoot, and he's been made to kind of be the villain in many cases rather than the solution to the problem. I don't think there's much he can do. I don't think there's much that he's allowed to do. I don't think he'd be handling things the way he is if he were given free rein. That's not the kind of show he ran when he was in Dallas, certainly. But I think Lightfoot has kind of kept him on a very short leash. And, you know, he'll lose his job eventually over this, and I think it's a damn shame, because if you had somebody who had some creative solutions and was willing to try them out and wasn't too worried about whose toes got stepped on a little bit in the process, you might see things turn around a little bit. But I think they've kind of surrendered whole parts of the city to whatever. And, you know, it's... To some extent, that's happened downtown, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think it started happening downtown. Tonight, so. Well, we started out with simple stuff. Well, I don't use the term. We were so friggin' ignorant on some level to not realize that if you have a building paying property taxes, the last thing you need is somebody going in there ordering stuff on your cell phone from a place that wasn't paying taxes. I mean, for you to let that happen, you're so stone-cold ignorant, I can't even go there. I mean... Because look what you did. I mean, some people are your bread and butter. Some people are just, all they're doing is taking advantage. And you can say, I mean, I think I try and, any kind somebody has a disadvantage, being it women or black people or whatever they are, I think that we have to address those kinds of things. But when you get to the point where you get this ridiculously stupid idea that people that commit crimes aren't really guilty, I mean, when you can drive, and I was on expressways all weekend, I never saw a cop. And when you have people that are so cowardly and so stupid that they're going to shoot out of cars at other people and not care who they hit, I mean, you're not reasoning with that group. I mean, there comes a point where you say, look, I need policemen on these expressways, and if somebody does that, they're going down. I mean, the only arrest we had, I won't say the only because I don't know about all of them, but was the Metro cop that saw the guy shooting out of the car in front of him on the Ryan, and he kind of quietly followed the guy home and called the police and said, here's where he is. It's like the only arrest we've had. And it was an off-duty cop that helped them out. There's nobody there, Jen.
Right.
I mean, what are we doing? Are we, in the midst of all this crime, we're saying that the crime is okay, or what?
Well, and changing the ways in which cops can pursue people. You know, with suspects, when, you know, there's obviously somebody fleeing a scene, then that doesn't mean they're guilty, but it certainly means that, you know, they're evading, if not, you know, escaping arrest. And you can't really go, you know, have a full pursuit now without getting an approval of a commander when you lose valuable time. You're making it so easy for perpetrators to get around any kind of expectation that they'll ever be arrested, let alone serve time, that people have to be emboldened to do stuff they wouldn't otherwise do. If you think it's easier to go out and hold somebody up or carjack somebody and have a joyride and you're not going to really pay a price for it, why wouldn't everybody in a certain slice of the population feel like, well, let's try that? Kids do stupid things always, and, you know, when you make it so that there's no consequences for doing stupid things, you just have more people doing them. So I don't think there's any kind of mystery in what's happened here. We've kind of thrown in the towel, whether it's shoplifting or property crime or, you know, random shootings or whatever. The perpetrators have the upper hand in all of this now.
Well, at some point, I know America is different than any other place because we have a lot of rights that we took from government. The government didn't give us. We took from government. And last thing I want is, you know, guilty till proven innocent or anything like that. I mean, I like our system, but I also know that the person getting shot has a right or two as well. You know, and the person who owns the house that gets burglarized or the car who gets carjacked, their rights are just as important as the guy doing it. And the last thing you want are... But, I mean, when you talk about the pursuit stuff, I'm going to push back a hair We have all kinds of police in this town. We probably have more police than we ever had. Maybe I'm not positive about that. And the idea that there's a shooting someplace and two guys show up and start chasing a couple of guys down the alley with their guns drawn without any support from anybody else. I mean, that's why you have a radio, right? You should be able to get somebody on the other end of the alley. You shouldn't have to chase the guy down there. And my uncle was actually gave me for a ride in this car, and I still remember, John. He had a 57 Oldsmobile convertible with three deuces on it. For those people who don't know, that, you know what that means, Manny?
Something with the engine.
No, it's three two-barrel carburetors sitting on top. Instead of one carburetor, you got three, so you can pour more gas.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they were impossible to tune, right? You had to go to, like, special guys to tune them because it's hard enough tuning one carburetor, much less three. So anyway, he goes, he was on patrol out. He was a county policeman. He goes, they go, armed robbery, blah, 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 suspect in red Oldsmobile, convertible. And he looks out, and the thing flies by him like, you know, he was parked. He goes, the thing goes by him, but God knows how fast. So he's got a six-cylinder, like, 57 Ford. He takes off, and he goes, I'm not getting anywhere. I said, you get him? He goes, I didn't get him. He could outrun me, but he couldn't outrun the radio. I called ahead, and we got up a mile, and two guys had him. Well, that is basic police work. He shouldn't have... The last thing you want is my uncle trying to go 85 miles an hour in some 57 Ford, bashing into people in cars along the way. That's why you have the radio, right? If you have an armed guy running down the alley, that's why you have other policemen. I mean, what are we, Jan, I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, am I right or not? There's coordination here. There's electronics. There's ways to do this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You know, but I think something that's clearly gone off the rails is that there isn't any kind of expectation that a cop can get community support for what
right.
they're
oh, yeah.
called to do. And certainly in certain areas where there's tremendous hostility against the cops, and even if you're not a person who's living a life of crime, you don't have any particular interest in seeing cops, you know, do their job, because they're doing their job against people you're friends with or related to, or you're getting a paycheck or a cut from somebody. You don't want to see these people put out of business. The whole culture of the city in certain areas now has become, you know, economically opposed to cops. And I don't think that enough attention is paid to this. There's such an ingrained gang culture that you can't, you know, be a cop and go in, and even if somebody's desperately in need of a cop because somebody broke into their house or shot somebody or whatever, you're not going to get people on that same block behind the cops. And that's what's really wrong.
Well, Jan, well, you also get, I mean, as my mom used to tell me, the reason why people don't parent properly is because it's real easy to say yes until you have a monster on your hands, but it's real hard to say no. And every person who talks about, you know, police doing this wrong or that wrong should be forced to arrest somebody themselves. Every situation where there's an arrest or a ticket is not a pleasant situation. Everybody thinks they're innocent. Even if you're not, you don't think you should be arrested, or you know of a guy who did something worse. How many guys do we know that if they get pulled over going 80 and a 50, know some guy who got 85, or never mind, and didn't get pulled over? I mean, there's no such thing as an easy arrest. I mean, do you normally say to somebody, would you please put your arms behind you so I can put the cuffs on, and they do it? I mean, I don't think that happens ever, does it?
No, especially if you're out, you know, you got a parole violation,
yeah.
too, and you know that, you know, the system is really going to be lined up against you if you get brought in on another charge like this with the record you have. So people are emboldened to just do crazy stuff and, you know, take their chances at shooting back at a cop. That would have been, I wouldn't say unheard of 50 years ago, but you didn't have people who felt that they could shoot a cop in any circumstance, and A, get away with it, or B, you know, held up in the criminal justice system, or let go, or, you know, just if people look the other way about it. There was a real stigma attached to that, even in places where there was hostility towards cops. So that's all changed now. The cops are really outmanned and outgunned, and, you know, there's a lot of people that's entirely okay with.
Oh yeah.
With that. So, you know.
Well, there's a lot of people making money on this drug trade that aren't just the gangbanger in the street.
Right.
But the weird part, though, John, is the thing that, you know, obviously we're not Stocks and Jocks. It's not our shtick to get into policing, okay? I mean, I have obviously an affinity for it because I have people in the family are policemen. But it comes down to economics. I mean, right now, would you invest in a municipal bond in Chicago?
No.
I mean, you're going to get down the line on this. I mean, I just saw last week, Matty, did you see somebody, Naperville or somewhere, just got a contract to build, I don't know how many, several, couple of hundred cars at least for Metra. And they're obviously the ones that are there probably 30 years old. Now, right now there's nobody on these trains. And the idea is that somehow or another, Chicago's demise is all COVID related. And I'm going to say, from what I talk to people in the burbs, it's maybe two-thirds COVID, third safety at this point. You know, what do I got to go down there for? What do I got to pay these prices for? Why do I have to pay this much to park? Why do I have to pay this much on the, you know, why did the thing on the Skyway go up by 35% this year? I mean, it's not just COVID. And anybody who thinks it is, God help you. I hope we're not paying you, because now, do we really need all new Metro cars for 3 years from now? Let's hope we do. But right now, I'm not sure we do at all, Dan.
Well, especially, I mean, the times I have ridden Metra in the last year, I've never seen a ticket taker.
Well, they supposedly started taking them last week.
Yeah, and you know, this is after, you know, ridership has been abysmally low, and what riders there are aren't even paying.
Well, you put your ticket out there. I took it a couple months ago. I put the ticket out there, and I didn't grab it. I'm thinking, we just make a mistake. I had no idea they weren't taking any of them.
No, I had the app already on my phone. You know, I was waiting for the, you know, I never saw a conductor walking. You'd always see people walking through the train to verify who got out of the last stop, punch their ticket, or, you know, take your fare or whatever. But the times I've ridden Metro, and they're not long trips, they're maybe 15, 20 minutes to the suburbs and back, but I've never seen anybody in the train. No Metro staff whatsoever, which also gives you kind of a creepy feeling. I mean, it's one of the problems with the CTA, too, is that there's a motor person in the front car, and that's it. There's nobody else in the other seven cars looking at
it. Well, look how much...
You can press a button if you want to summon somebody, but that person has to stop the train and walk all the way through the train to where you are.
What do you think, Jan, if you did a serious study? Now, for those that don't know, there used to be on the... every train, probably. It was certainly an eight-car train. There was a motorman who drove the train, duh. And there was a guy in the middle who operated the doors. And it was essentially another guy, and he would check to see if people were on the platform and blah, 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 and if somebody was sick or whatever. And now they got rid of that guy to save money. I'm going to guess, when did this happen, maybe 6-7 years ago? I'm going to say that after 6 or 7 years, they've more than found a way to piss away that money in administrative jobs, and they haven't saved a dime. That the budget is just as high, the fares are higher, and I don't think they're anywhere better off.
I agree.
But I can't prove it.
They found new ways to waste it, I think.
Yeah, they found new ways to waste it, but how do you have an eight car train with, there's got to be, how many people do you think are in a car, maybe? Can you put 70 maybe jammed in?
I was going to say less than that, but yeah, I mean, when it's jammed in, which it normally is before COVID, I mean, I would take the Purple Line into downtown and have to wait for the fourth train before I could even squeeze on. And even that was a squeeze on. I was going to say maybe 50 or 60
right,
per
so
car, but
500, 600 people on that train and you only have one person. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, it's crazy. 500, 600.
And I think they got rid of the middle guy a lot longer than 6 or 7 years ago.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think it was like 20 years ago.
Now. And of course, what that's done too is embolden petty theft, muggings, crime. You can, you know, take somebody's phone, take their wallet, punch them out, get off at the next stop, and before it's reported, that person's long gone, and there isn't any quick response. There may be somebody down in the turnstile at the L station, but I don't think they're going to go out of their way to stop a
no.
Somebody, they're not going to go out and pursue somebody who's fleeing a crime scene. They're not set up to do that. And I have felt very vulnerable on buses and L trains for some time, and I feel vulnerable on Metro now, which I never used to really. So,
well, yeah, the whole we got all these cameras because, of course, we people keep paying people off to put cameras in. Does anybody ever watch them?
They got great footage, too. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Matty, it wasn't like when a guy pulled a knife on you that there were three cops waiting at the next station, were there?
No. No one's monitoring them. Obviously, the police go back and look at them if a crime happens, but that's about it.
It's, you have to, the incredible, when you look at some place like New York, for instance, and I don't think it's happening there, but if Manhattan got to the point where nobody wanted to be down there and it was all crime-ridden, it's not like you could just build things up in Queens and Brooklyn. Because your rapid transit system, your subway system in New York, there's no train from Brooklyn to Queens. You got to go into Manhattan and come back out.
Everything's funneled through Manhattan.
Yeah, everything's funneled through Manhattan. So when this stuff starts to happen, when you start taking these neighborhoods and tearing them up, they're not only locations where people live; they're strategic locations. I mean, if you have a couple of mile area on the Green Line or whatever line it is, other people are not going to want to take the Green Line through these places. Plus, who wants to live there? You can't. The flight out of Chicago in the last couple of years, like 80,000 African-American people have left town?
Yep.
I mean, everybody thinks that... I mean, and who's leaving? The people you don't want to leave. If all the gangbangers left, I don't think we'd be too worried about it, would we?
Well, the people who could afford to stay also can afford to move.
Well, yeah.
And once you lose that tax base and you lose that kind of will to stick it out, the people who just are fed up and, you know, I don't know. I was encouraged yesterday in the Sun-Times. I saw full-page ads spread out through the paper, one for the reopening of the Hilton Towers, the other for the reopening of the Palmer House, and then another one, full-page ad, all the same design. They're all put out by the same art director and everything else. And the last one was for the Drake Hotel, which never closed, which I wasn't clear on either.
Well, but I bet I'm gonna guess they had...
reduced capacity.
Well, they probably had three floors.
I'm sure they... And it was public spaces and all that, I'm sure, were not functioning, but... I thought that, you know, this was a good sign that this is later than what they had announced it to be. It was supposed to be like mid-May, so it now seems to be happening.
Well, why would these
are all hotels that are in areas where crimes have been committed kind of ostentatiously in the last year with flash mobs and other stuff. Unless you make sure that people who are going to stay in these hotels that they feel safe walking around any hour of the day, let alone late at night, you're not going to have too many people flocking to them. So... there's got to be a more concerted effort, not just to reopen these places, but to encourage people to feel that they're being protected when they stay in them, too, because you go out on the street at the wrong minute, and you're in the middle of a shooting or something, you're not going to come back
to
Chicago. You're not going to come back to the Palmer House.
Here I am staring at, hey, Jackass, 2 a.m. and Sunday morning, 200 North Wabash. That's what, Wabash and the River? How many high-end hotels are right there? About six?
I feel like three out of every four crimes I read about in the last 6 months that happened downtown are right between Madison and 200 Wabash. It's all right there. What is going on right there?
It just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Maddie, if you were to go to Hey Jackass, you'd probably find the reason for that is that there's a key here, right? If it's just in white, people are wounded and they give you the address. If it's in red, it means he or she croaked. If it's in blue, it means there's actually an article about it. So every one that you'll see downtown, like the 200 North Wabash, there's a newspaper article about it. So you are going to...
Well, yeah. Like a couple weeks ago, there was a guy waving around a shotgun, and he didn't actually shoot anybody, thank God. But, you know, he pulled a woman out of a car, and then the police... surrounded him, and he pointed it at the police, and the police still didn't shoot him, and they were able to get him to drop it and surrender, and he kind of ran away, and then they caught him. But then, like, a week later, 100 North Wabash, there was one, and then now there's 200 North Wabash, which is, like, right in that, like, two- or three-block corridor. There seems to be just a new crime every weekend.
Well, I think it comes from, and I'm speaking out of school, it comes from the people you don't want all trying to crash in Millennium Park. So when they close Millennium Park early, which you've had to do a couple of weekends out of the last few, all your subway stops to get you back to wherever the hell you're going are all in Wabash. So it's essentially one block over from Michigan. So that's where the I use the term undesirables, end up is on Wabash.
That would make sense.
But I think the key thing is, whenever something happens down here, there's a newspaper article about it. If it happens at 89th and Cottage Grove, unless there's 10 people, you're not even a news item, which is even scarier, right?
It is.
Yeah, it's just kind of expected to happen.
Yep. Well, look at this. How many people we got here? 8900 South Cottage Grove, 4 a.m. on Sunday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people. Nobody's died, which is even... What do we got? We got male 28, male 28, male 29, male 31, male 31, female 32, male 33, female 38. So there's 8 people hanging around. Of course, it's hotter than hell. If you don't have air conditioning, I can see why you're outside. But man, when was the last time we stood on a corner at 4 a.m., Benny?
It's been a while.
Not that we haven't ever done it. But this Sunday morning here, this is unbelievable. There's got to be 40 people. Or 30. I mean, it's not 40, but it's probably 25. I mean, I don't see how do you raise kids here, for God's sake?
You know, and this is, I think, the reason behind Lightfoot's decision to, you know, keep a lid on liquor sales, you know, after 9 p.m., which started, you know, had really nothing to do with the COVID, but I think there were other factors driving it, and I think one of them is that when people congregate out in the open, which they seem to be more willing to do now than ever, even though it's much less safe than it ever was. If you have places that will sell alcohol, you know, until midnight or beyond, you're encouraging that kind of, you know, street party. And this is her way of tamping it down, which just creates, you know, resentment all the way down the chain. It isn't just people who go to street parties that are hurt by
interview
and liquor sales.
Well, I'm not taking a shot at the people who like their hooch, but at the same time, we're opening up marijuana stores all over the place. So what are we doing?
There's a disconnect here. And
yeah, but they close
early. It's unfortunate because Lightfoot has tried to be all things, I think, to all people to some extent, and she's going to, if she loses again, it will be because she lost the progressive wing of the party that was backing her, that feel that she's betrayed them because she hasn't, you know, done everything they expect her to do. And she's straddling. It's kind of an unbridgeable coalition here. One of the things, you know, her rejection of the you know, policing standards and all this stuff, and, you know, the elected school board, all these things that she is, you know, taking heat for, is because she's positioned herself in people's eyes as wanting all these things and not being too particular about how they get implemented. And of course, she's very particular about how they get implemented because she knows if you do it wrong, it's going to have a huge impact on people's willingness to stay in the city. If the schools go in the toilet or nobody trusts the police or the police don't do anything. So she's going to, like, I think eventually fall on her own sword because she couldn't keep all these people happy. It's an impossible job.
Well, you can't have people that are, you know, you got to have some sort of common sense. You can't listen to people in the midst of a crime rave say, get rid of the police. Well, that's interesting. And now the latest is, when you're the mayor, you get elected, your job is to run the city. So the people who run the various departments of the city, if you don't get to hire and fire them, how exactly? I mean, it's like we're going to have Matty Weber is going to be the manager of the Cubs, but every time he makes a pitching change, you got to have a vote of the people in the stands. I mean, how do you have another group hiring and firing the police commissioner? I mean, that makes absolutely no sense.
Well, what person would ever take a job under those conditions? You know, you have nobody you can count on to back you up.
Right.
I give Lightfoot credit. I mean, I know that Brown has been a controversial choice, but I think he was a good guy for the job, and the reason he hasn't succeeded more is he hasn't been given enough freedom by Lightfoot to do what I think he could do. But, you know, if you don't have somebody who's got the mayor's backing, and the mayor's in there for 4 years, I don't think I'd be interested in taking a superintendent's job, knowing what the track record was here. And the same thing with whether, you know, Janice Jackson and the schools or anything else. You get an elected school board, it's like, forget it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you mean.
But
John, it does come back, again, it comes back to, you know, investments. I mean, what about the McDonald's and the Googles and the people that put all this money on the West Side? I mean, if you were to have a real conversation, and I'll ask Matty this, with the chairman of McDonald's, do you think now that he's happy moving in the city? The answer may still be yes. Okay, but it may. What do you think? If he had to do it all over again, do you think he would?
I doubt it. I don't think any of these people envision this kind of culture developing.
Well, it's hard to pull the COVID out of it. It's hard to say. Right. Would you have been better off in the suburbs with COVID?
See, I think it's strictly COVID related at that point. The West Loop is a great neighborhood, and a ton of people live there or did, and then COVID happened and just completely wiped it out. And I think every business is dealing with that. Like Jill's company bought a brand new office space on Madison near, I think near Ogilvy, and it's sitting empty for almost 2 years now. And they got screwed. It's just bad timing, but you can't predict that.
No, but what I'm saying is some of the stuff that's happened in the meantime is kind of what we're talking about is not COVID related. It's violence related. It's police related. Maybe it would have happened without COVID. I don't know. But now all of a sudden the reluctance, I don't know, Maddie, if you had
I'm saying the violence spike in the downtown area,
yes,
is COVID related. The fact that no one is downtown is completely COVID related. Now, violence outside of downtown, sure, that you could argue that's not COVID related at all, and I would hear you out. But those businesses aren't at 89th and Cottage Grove. Those businesses are in the Loop or they're in the West Loop, and it's abandoned right now. And so crime is spiking because there's no one there.
All right. So you're thinking more people.
I think when we reopen right. back up, those businesses will have different decisions to make, and that'll just be based on the technology that's allowed us to be efficient working from home and a lot more cost effective, and they'll have decisions to make on that, on whether it's worth having a huge campus, no matter where it is, just in general.
Well, I think that's going to come back to my read, and this is just a guess. We should do this like we do football. I'm going to say that you end up with 75-80% of the people back, and some people, because it's so obvious they can do stuff at home or they don't have a family or something, will be 1 or 2 days a week at home. And, you know, maybe some will be 5, but by and large, I don't think anybody wants to be home if everybody else is at work talking about them.
I agree. Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think if you have kids, you definitely want to be back at work in some way. And but then there's people that did just as well. Where there's a, you know, if you have a job that has a metric that literally says you either hit your number or you didn't hit your number, and you hit it working from home, then you have a very good argument that you should be able to keep working from home. If you, it's for those in operations and in human resources and whatever your other position might be, where you don't actually have a quota or a tangible number to hit or not hit. That's where I think management has the right to say, hey, we want you in the office. We want to see you working. And I understand that.
Yeah, well, it'll remain to be seen. But some of the people, I know guys from the Fed that used to live in the city that now live way the hell out. And I'm going to say that one piece of the decision that I could care less about is I move far away. I got to work from home. I didn't tell you to move far away. That was your call.
You're right about that. I know when we were down to Miami, we were hanging out with some people that were from New York that moved down to Miami because they couldn't stand being in New York during COVID because they couldn't do anything.
I understand that, boy.
And you're in a $3,000 a month apartment that's the size of a shoebox and you can't even leave it. And they were like, screw this. And they moved down to Miami. And I said, well, what about when we reopen? At that time, we still didn't really know, but we knew it was coming. Like, then what are you going to do? It's like, well, I've been working from home this whole time. I'm going to keep working from home. I go, well, not if your boss tells you to come back to work. You're going to have to get a new job.
Is there a commuter train from Miami to... Well, we better hope... Well, by the way, your buddy supposedly is taking his first trip. Bezos. The first... not him. Who's the other guy? Somebody's taking the first flight. The first man for the flight, you can go to the hell's doing this?
About Elon Musk?
No, Bezos will fly the first passenger space flight of his company Blue Origin in July.
Oh, wow. So he's doing, where's that going?
I don't know. Space, evidently. I don't think
so
those guys.
So he's competing with Elon.
Yeah, I don't think those guys, I don't think those flights are planning on going to orbit, are they, John? They're just going to go up and come down. I think they're just going to go up and come down. They're going to be like the Mercury one.
We fight to keep them up in orbit.
Yeah, the people will be like, keep that guy up. We're trying to shoot him down. See, there'll be guys up there with their drones trying to take the dude out. Anyway,
Well, I got an inflation story. It's kind of related to what we were talking about too. But you know, I've subscribed to the Art Institute for a number of years and have a membership, and you know, it gives you unlimited use of going in and out of the museum. You can go in and out several times a day if you want. You can get admission to some of the special shows, and it was always fairly affordable. So I was using it enough where I finally got a 2-year membership a couple of years ago. And of course, one of those 2 years, the museum was closed. The last 2 years, and it was, nobody could get into the museum. And so I got the renewal notice the other day, and the price has exploded for another 2-year membership. It's now, a 1-year membership is what the 2-year membership used to be. And frankly, I'm kind of thinking, I don't like the idea of going downtown just on the spur of the moment, unless I've got a kind of an escape plan or whatever. I don't want to just be wandering around like a tourist anymore, sampling city life. It doesn't interest me anymore, and I think you're asking for trouble in many cases. But if the Art Institute has jacked up their prices like that, thinking that they're going to get any kind of, return of the people who formerly supported them, a lot of people are going to think twice about coming downtown for any reason, let alone including a visit to the Art Institute. And when you jack up the price like this, you make it less likely that people are going to, pay just for a one-day visit or anything else. So I think that, whatever has happened to the expectations of some of these organizations, that there's a clientele still there to support them at whatever price they want to charge, when, they've been denied the chance to get access for the past year now or more. I just think they got another guest coming. It's going to be a new climate for any kind of organization or venue that expects a steady flow of people. If you're in a city center, you've got a lot of things to contend with, not just in Chicago, every place else. People are not going to come back in the numbers they were coming before. I just don't see it happening.
Well, both of you guys, I'm going to ask an interesting question in that everybody has their varying views of unions, and bifurcate the public unions versus the private unions, and say, okay, the last time there was an inflation, I'm already leading the witness here by saying the last time, because I'm assuming there's going to be an inflation issue this time that gets way out of hand like it did last time. But let's say there is. There was some, being unions, there was some structure in place for the middle class and other people to essentially fight back and say, well, if you're going to raise these prices this ridiculous amount, we got to get our piece. And most big unions were able to get that over time. Now, over the entire 68 when it sort of started, actually, let's push it to 70 because we went off to Bretton Woods in 71. So say 70 through 82, Jan, when it was kind of, for the entire 12-year period, I'm going to say at least the union groups didn't get clobbered that bad at least half of the way. After 5, 6, 7 years, they were able to get to the point where they were probably somewhat inflation neutral due to contracts that had escalation clauses and those kinds of things in them. Because if you don't have an escalation clause, there's stuff where if you're over 65, there's little things your government does for you, or people have found a way to grab out of the butt of government, where the people over 65 bitched and moaned about I'm not saying that's a bad thing, about property taxes so long that if you're over 65 you catch a break, right? There's little stuff along the way that various groups that can't handle. You can't give somebody on fixed income a 20% property tax increase because of expenses, because you're assuming the person who's still working is getting some raises and can pay it. It's a bad assumption now, but that is the stupid assumption that they go under. But right now, in the 70s, it was considered the cruelest tax there is. Right now, it's going to be triple that, Jack, because nobody is set up for it. The only difference now is you have so many firms that are have much more concentration, and they're not feeling it at all. They're loving it. But the percentage of people, I'm going to say in 78, people who had savings and had them in the bank and owned a home and maybe worked for a union or worked with a union were either ahead of the game because the house was appreciating or neutral on the issue, maybe to the point slightly ahead of it, okay? Most unions didn't get 100% increase. They got 75 already like the ones at Pullman, but you were close, and your house was going up, and by the way, you were making, you know, 12% in the bank when the inflation's 10%. So you were pretty much immune. Name me anybody now other than a CEO of one of these companies that's gleefully raising prices. Name me anybody who's immune right now. Not the saver, not the worker, and probably not the homeowner. Well, yeah, the homeowner to a certain extent now, but then it depends on the area. You're either making out like a bandit or you're getting clobbered because you're in an area where people can't wait to leave, right? But by and large, if you're a homeowner right now, you're making out like a bandit. But if you sell your place, you got to go buy another place. So what I'm saying, there's nobody other than a very select few. The 1%ers, the 5%ers are going to make out like this way more than anybody else, I think. And back in the 70s, or at least in the late 70s, we had gotten to the point where, what would you guess, Jan? 50% of society was somewhat immune because of various and sundry escalation clauses, and you made more money, you made enough in the bank, and other kinds of
right.
things. But now,
you're insulated,
yeah,
right?
Now I don't see any of that. I mean, the guy who's got 50 grand sitting in the bank, it's really going to be awful getting no interest rate now that the inflation rate's 10. I mean, talk about really sticking it where the sun don't shine. I mean, right? Not to mention, at work he's not getting a raise. I mean, there's no way on earth that we're going to see median income in this country go from 37 if we have a 12% inflation the next year. We're not going to see that at 42, I don't think. If we do, it's, you know, I'm going to doubt it. I'm not average, maybe, because you start counting the CEOs. But I see this as being something that could be really horrible to the point where there's civil discontent. And I think you're seeing it around the world. I know you weren't on when Dan, my bro, sent us the thing with the worldwide grain prices, cereals. And it's right back to where it was in 2010, 2011. And you know what happened there? We had Arab Spring. We had God knows what else. And it coincided almost exactly with the price of food going higher than a person can make on a daily wage. And we're right back there. So why do we keep electing people that don't seem to get this? Or if they do, they ignore it. Or they're so in bed with the people who are making out like a bandit. I mean, you go to Home Depot, you go to Menards, they're happy as a clam. They're raising prices whenever they damn well please, right?
Right. And you really can't do any kind of effective, you know, cost comparison with these places. They're all charging top dollar. And you know, nobody bats an eye about it, because where else are you going to go to get that size screw or this size transformer or whatever? You don't have a lot of options, so you pay. You have to. I think, you know, what this is going to do, though, to people's, you know, frustrated appetites, when, you know, you can see what's happening to a meal in a restaurant or what it's going to cost to ride public transportation, assuming you want to go to any of the places it serves. It's going to take a huger chunk out of your available budget, and you know you don't have the money to spend what you were spending before, let alone more, given what people's earning power has looked like. And you have the tremendous, you know, pain and suffering of people who don't have anything else going on in their lives, and they would crave some kind of entertainment or going out for a night in the town. It just isn't worth it anymore. So that has to fuel unrest in, you know, in the smallest sense, just in your own home, where you feel like your options to have a good time with your life are significantly reduced and likely to keep reducing at the rate we're going. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's ever going to play out in a way that makes elections, you know, have any different results, because that process is pretty much controlled too. And who runs is no accident in Chicago or Illinois or a lot of other states. And who doesn't get to run? It's a finely tuned machinery, really. So,
but you don't have
like,
to.
Well, if only people voted for this person, you know, what person? What person has any kind of support within the structures that exist to get people on the ballot or keep them off? Has any interest in changing any of this? I don't think anybody does.
Well, it's probably true. But what I think it comes down to political power. I think the demise of the middle class has a lot to do with the fact they don't have any political power.
Oh, yeah. That's been the case for quite a while. Yeah.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, The lower classes do a little bit, just a little bit, but it's all people on top. I mean, I was, matter of fact, I sent it to you. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, either one of you gentlemen. Did you read this big thing about the G7 and Janet Yellen is crowing like a crow, that now all of a sudden there's a, explain this to me. I mean, I have trouble with this. G7 nations reach historic deal on global tax reform. For anybody who's been listening to anybody, not just us, over the past 10 years, it's a race to the bottom in terms of taxation, and that's what caused all these people to have they open up a place in Europe and they pay the European tax and the Irish tax and whatever, and you go from place to place and you find the lowest tax haven, and that's how much you cheat and steal and tell people that that's where your profit really is. Now you can get somebody on here with more degrees than I have and say, oh no, they're just following. Hey, come on. When Starbucks has all their income in Amsterdam and not in London, and when they got, 1,000 Starbucks in London and 2 in Amsterdam, it doesn't pass the smell test, John. I mean, at least it doesn't on the south side. They really do. They're buying the beans from Amsterdam. You know, give me a break. You know, stick it where the sun don't shine. It's where I put it. But that's what they did forever. So now they say, okay, we're going to have a minimum 15% corporate tax everywhere in the world. So no matter where you are, you're paying 15%. So it's not as advantageous to you to find the short. Now, of course, the 15 is still less than what we charge here, and it's probably half of what individuals pay. So to most people like the three of us, we're still going to say, that still sucks, right? But to get a load of this now, here, the first thing I read here, now this is in published by CNBC and June 5th, which would have been Saturday. Now, just give me help here. Somebody wants to tweet in, please. Under the agreement, G7 nations will back a global minimum corporate tax of at least 15%. UK Finance Minister Rishi Sunak announced. Now, why they're paying 15 and we're paying 35, I have no idea. But here's a good one. The reforms will affect the largest companies in the world with profit margins of at least 10%. Why does the hair just stand up on the back of my neck? What does that mean, and how are we going to get around that one? U.S. Secretary Janet Yellen, who was in London for the face-to-face meeting, hailed the move as significant and unprecedented. What does the second line even mean here? Profit margins of at least 10. These people are going to tell you what their profit margins are, and you're going to believe them?
Right. I would think this is just going to create a whole flurry of offshore, places of dumping profits and hiding them.
I don't. So let's see. Amazon's going to run their stuff through Maddie Weber's barbecue sauce to where their profit margin is 9.9%. They don't have to pay anything. And Maddie's barbecue sauce is going to be in where? Is it going to be on Mars where the new plane's going to take them? What are we doing here? What difference? If you don't have a profit margin, you don't have anything to pay anyway, right?
Right.
So why I don't get it. If you make 9% and your revenue is 90 bazillion, why don't you have to pay on the 9? I mean, Matt, do you have any idea where we're going with this? Because I don't. I mean, what difference maybe your profit margin is?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't think this is any kind of, it isn't a workable way around whatever the problem is perceived to be. When you carve out just a little segment of businesses that are actually, going to have this flat rate. But think about how this has worked in the past, where there's supposedly, a tax rate for real estate and everything else, and then you get Sears going to Hoffman Estates with all of these perks thrown in, where they pay much less than you or I would pay if we were in the same position to build a house or something in that county, part of the county. None of these places are going to be, nor would they want to be free of all the possibilities of working out an individual deal where give us this plus that and we'll give you this plus that and maybe the tax will stay the same, but it's going to cost each of us differently based on the deal we can put together. So it isn't like this is going to stop the twisted deals from happening or people making out like bandits in one corner and somebody else getting screwed at the same time. So I just think that this is all like total smoke and mirrors for one.
Well, is it variable margin or is it all in fixed full margin?
I don't know.
Let's say for instance, Our buddy Thomas is the CEO, Manny. Just saying. Of Webby Inc. Will you put Thomas in as CEO? I don't know. Would you ever do that?
Probably not, but go with it.
Let's roll with it. So let's say you guys just made $20 million and your profit rate is, say, 10.1%. And Thomas says, gee, Chief, what if I gave myself a $2 million bonus? Won't that knock us under the 10%?
Right.
And I go, yeah, that'll work. All of a sudden now you don't have to pay taxes because you gave him a bonus?
Wait, I can understand that little anecdote. I think that hasn't already been figured out by the people pushing this flat, you know, 15% tax rate.
I mean, I've been looking at this for 40 seconds, and there's one way of doing it. do they think we're this stupid? I mean, do we, you know, what did George Carlin say? Look at how stupid the average person is and think half of them are stupider than him or something like that? I mean, are we on this show the only people that can figure out? There's one, and I'll bet if we sat here with the next half hour, we have Mr. Mike Hart coming in.
That should be charged with a consulting.
Yeah, I mean, I bet we come up with five other ways to screw with this. I mean, how do you define profit margin? I can define it 100 different ways.
I mean, and you can be sure that the final version of it is going to be tailored to suit about, you know, 60 select CEOs.
I give myself a. How can that not go by the board? Let me get this straight, you old farts. If you guys give me a raise, our tax goes down and we actually profit from it. Can you?
Stranger things have happened.
Right? I'm doing this company a favor by getting this bonus. You, I mean, Manny, could you write fiction like this and sell a book? Anyway, S&P futures down 50 cents, NASDAQ futures down 4. Jan, you know, I don't know, every Monday we come up with some weird stuff, but this could be the most bizarre. If I give myself a bonus, I save you idiots money. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lord, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures now up 2. NASDAQ futures up down 6. So we're mixed. We were down a bit earlier, but now we're maybe pushing the upside of here. Now futures up 45. Over in Europe, we've got small to the upside. DAX up 14.1%. FTSE up 26.4%. CAC around up 21.3%. For Asia, we've got kind of a mixed bag here, which like we seem to have every day now. Nikkei up 77.3%. Shanghai up 7.2%. Hang Seng down 130.5%. So, again, the mixed bag. It's a way of review. Friday, we had a nice rally. Dow Jones up 179. S&P up 37. NASDAQ up 199. Bonds today, 10-year up basis point to 1.57. The Bund, minus 0.20. Yeah, those guys are making a run towards zero and then turn around with the other way pretty fast. Japan, positive 0.07. UK, positive 0.80. Oil, down a little bit. 69.40 under 70. The Brent's still over 71, though. Down 23 cents, 71.66. Natural gas down 3 cents, 306. RBOB unchanged at 220. We've got gold down $4 at 1887. So it's down a little bit from a little bit over 1900. But not much. It's hanging in here. Silver down 18 cents, 27.71. Copper down 4 cents, 4.48. And we've got Bitcoin up 877, 2.4%. And it's at 36,660. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of accidents starting to pile up here. First, we'll start on the north side on the Edens. Looks like we have a crash on the inbound side at Tower Road. That's causing some delays if you're coming inbound on the Edens. It's not affecting the Kennedy, although there are high traffic volumes on the Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Do have a crash on the Eisenhower. This is on the outbound side, blocking the right lane just before Holman Avenue, which is exit 26B. And then also on the Stevenson, inbound Stevenson at California as you're approaching downtown there is a crash. But everything else is all quiet as far as accidents are concerned. Weather today, thunderstorms in the area, lots of clouds, plus cooler temperatures. We were in the 90s for the last 3 days. Today, a high of 77 with rain and thunderstorms in the forecast. Right now, it's overcast, still dry, and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 103 today. Right now, it's clear and 76. In sports, Cubs and White Sox are still in first place, Chief. The Sox have been in first place for most of the season, Cubs for the last few weeks. But the White Sox shut out the Tigers, winning 3-0. Cubs beat the Giants, salvaging the final game of their four-game set, 4-3, before they head to San Diego tonight. Diamondbacks lost to the Brewers, 2-0. Chief.
Mike, how are you, buddy?
We have Jeff, how are you?
Here's the guy.
Here's the guy.
Morning, Chief. Morning. Good to hear your great tones. Now, would you be a guy that, well, with a new plan, the worldwide tax plan, if your firm managed to sneak under the rate, the 10% margin rate, or if you were over that rate and had to pay this 15% tax, would you be willing to take one for the team and get like a $10 million bonus to drop you under 10?
You think there's going to be a little bit of arbitrage games in that little proposal?
Every time I read a sentence like that, Jeff, I just shudder. I'm going, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Unbelievable, right? Talk about being able to game a tax situation.
What irritates you more as a really bright dude that I've come to really appreciate being on the show with? What irritates you more, the fact that they come up with these sneaky little tricks, or they think we're so dumb that we won't figure them out?
You know, perhaps the third option, that they haven't figured out that they won't work.
Well, that's even scarier.
You know, just that maybe they're blinded by an ideology or giving the impression of action that they propose, things that just that aren't workable and that a reasonable person would come to that conclusion. I think that's either for political game or for political gain or ignorance or naivety, but these certainly wouldn't exist in the business world.
Did you, we've been getting some stuff that Kevin's been sending around and so forth, but who hacked into all of Fauci's emails? Somebody, right? Was it
Oh, it was a FOIA.
It was obtained under Freedom of Information Act under FOIA from BuzzFeed and one other media company. I think Vanity Fair.
Right, I think it was Vanity
Fair.
BuzzFeed
and Vanity Fair.
Everybody's been, you know, zeroing in on whether you're right or left or whether you like the guy or don't. You're zeroing in on all this stuff. And the weird part, Jeff, is I don't know where I got the thing from.
Say that again?
Yesterday I got an article that said it was more of a human sort of interest story. And it just talked about, what Fauci's, he's in his 70s, for God's sake? You know, it doesn't make him bad. I mean, but that he was averaging like 2,000 emails a day from people like he felt he had to answer. He never got any sleep. He was pretty much cast out on this island where with very little help from the administration or anybody. Now, I'm not a huge fan of what you see that the guy did going back and forth, but when you look at what these individual people are actually in a position where you're supposed to do something in government and stuff focuses on you, I don't know how anybody handles that without having people helping you out. And I don't think Trump helped them. I don't know if these guys are helping them. You wonder, how can anybody be in that spot, whatever it is? I mean, if you were a general now or something, if you were Eisenhower, how could you even, at least in those days, you could duck away from the phone calls and stuff. I mean, what do you do today? Father Hesburgh at Notre Dame used to be famous for, if you wrote him a letter, I mean, the guy had a few people working with him, but he used to answer like 200, 250 letters a day. But that's still not the same as 2,000 emails. I mean, how do you let this guy, everybody who is anybody who has access, you have to answer, right? Or your boss is going to come down. How can you write Jeff back, or something like that? I mean, if you actually try and do something in Washington, is it almost undoable?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, he's really criticized frequently because he appeared to be a media whore. You know, he'll take any media assignment, any request for media. Fauci's been on innumerable podcasts and interviews, and looks like he rarely says no. So the question then is, when is he actually working? But perhaps, and I say this with all humility, not really knowing the full purpose of his job, maybe that was it. Maybe it was to be the media face, and maybe that was his job being maximized, and that he was just, doing the best possible role at his job by taking as much media hits as possible. It wasn't clear to me if that was driven by ego or driven by job description, but, he is infamous for saying no to no media outlet, regardless of, size or impact or stature. So that's one question. Now, you raised another question, though, about, and then it's mindset. Luckbox Magazine, our publication, is owned by a larger financial services group called the Tasty Trade Financial Network that just in turn's been acquired by IG, the brokerage firm. It's a global trading network. In fact, that deal is supposed to close this week. Should be about a $1 billion transaction based on what was announced. And the CEO of Tasty Trade, who is the same guy who developed, Tom Sosnoff, built Thinkorswim, and then
he traded 8 feet away from me in the Ameritrade
trade for $750 million, and here's this company now he's selling for $1 billion. I know as fact that the 300 to 500 emails that he gets every single day, he has a 24-hour turnaround. He has an open email account to his customers. He'll answer every email from every customer, does it personally, and nobody else takes that role from him. So I know it's all doable, and it depends, but that he feels as though is his job. It wasn't clear to me what Fauci's job is. I think the bigger question about Fauci is some of the conflicts and some of the motives that seem to be. I don't think it's a full story, so I'm not gonna be careful to pull the trigger on accusation here, but what he does, he certainly seems compromised by a number of those emails in terms of what he chose to recognize and not. I mean, he clearly knew that the Wuhan lab theory was more than credible, and he knew it a long, long, long time ago, whereas he continued to discount it publicly, even though all his colleagues, or many of his colleagues, have acknowledged its truth. And then there's, he clearly had evidence that masks were of no or little value, unless they were N95 masks, of which he completely chose to go the other way on. So I think he's compromised, but at the same time, you know, he was a voice of at least comfort and direction that was lacking from the administration. It certainly didn't come from Trump. So, you know, it's easy to criticize Fauci, and I'm one of those critics, but at the same time, to his credit, at least he provided a little bit more reassurance when it was really necessary, and Trump was completely ineffective. In fact, if anything, yeah, you know, a negative influence in that role. So I think it's interesting. We'll see. Unfortunately, like everything else, this comes down along partisan lines. Nobody's willing to look at any subject, you know, objectively or with nuance. And whether you like Fauci is based on whether you like Democrats and masks.
Yeah.
And whether you don't is, you know, if your view comes from the other side, it's completely ridiculous.
Well, Jeff, I got this, as you know, I don't know where this stuff necessarily comes from. I'm in this coronavirus, I don't know what I am, quicksand where they send me all this stuff. And it's, but you know, it's weird. There's one guy here is following. Well, I got two things. One was some massive list of all the, like, little lies and innuendos that went the whole way from the Fuhu to the Chinese to our people and stuff. And there's another guy sends this thing where he thinks what the most likely scenario actually is, starting from, well, just to give you a clue, and it says in 2012, six miners working in a bat-infested copper mine in southern China were infected with a bat coronavirus. All of them developed symptoms exactly like COVID-19. Three of them died, and some of that stuff went to the Wuhan lab, you know, and it was in the midst of a bunch of other stuff they were.
Yeah.
But you know what it only reads to me like, Jeff, from the Fauci side to our side to the world? If you read it all the way through, and this is going to sound really, really dumb to most people, it sounds like a four-year-old telling his first lie, and if you just let him go for a week, he has to tell like 15 other whoppers to cover it up. I mean, it is scary that Wuhan had a problem. The Chinese government said that there wasn't from Wuhan, and all of a sudden, the next week, the Chinese military takes over the Wuhan lab. I mean, it's one thing after another, and every time they tried to obfuscate it, it got worse, and they had to tell another lie the next day. You know, they're destroying evidence, and the next day, people are demanding evidence, and they say they don't have it, and then there's people coming out and said, well, you just said to destroy it. It's like a whole string of a bunch of four-year-olds.
That's right, and the absence of curiosity, at the very least, by the overall American media, which appears to be again because of a partisan bias. It's shameful. I mean, that's what
journalism
is supposed to be about.
I just read like three of these things. I don't want to bore everybody. Plus, I'm going to listen to you. I'm about 10 down. It said, In the critical first weeks of the outbreak, Wuhan authorities worked aggressively to silence the whistleblowers and destroy evidence that could prove incriminating. And nobody is anywhere in any of this stuff that I've read, maybe you have differently, said that the Chinese did this on purpose. It just was a screw.
No.
When the Beijing authorities got involved...
And just to stop on that point just for a second, and ironically, because I think the walls are crumbling down on this big lie, and this is a much bigger lie than what's so-called the big lie right now, as far as I'm concerned, based on the millions of deaths globally. But I saw Fauci in a recent report saying, you know, how preposterous it was to suggest that that the virus was created in the Wuhan lab for the purpose of, you know, the equivalent of chemical warfare. And where no one really is, and that it was released intentionally. And now he's moved his position of denial to that point, saying, no, you know, that's a preposterous idea that it was intentionally released to cause global havoc. And the fact of the matter is, there's very few people, if any, saying that.
No.
What they are saying is that it was accidentally released from the Wuhan lab, and he's moved the goalpost now, saying how preposterous it is to suggest that it was intentionally released.
Right.
And I think that's really indicative of where the facts lie.
Well, the next one, here's kind of one of the key ones, I think, Jeff. When Beijing authorities got involved a bit later, they likely faced the choice of implicating the Wuhan authorities and, in effect, taking blame for what was quickly emerging as a major global problem, are turning into the curve. I like that. Turning into the curve and going all in for a cover-up. I believe they likely chose the second option. Yeah. The Chinese government then massively lobbied the WHO to prevent the WHO from declaring COVID-19 as an international emergency and prevented WHO investigators from entering China for nearly a month. This is all real early. So this is in late January. PLA, was that the People's Liberation Army? Major General Chen Wei was put in charge of containment efforts in Wuhan. This role included supervision of the WIV, which had previously been considered a civilian institution. So it's just, it's one after another of what they had to do because the one they did before didn't work. And they all kind of flow, you know, in some ways. Mm-hmm. And, this guy thinks it all came from that these guys who caught this disease in 2012, they isolated it, brought it into the Wuhan labs, and they were investigating in it plus a bunch of others, and something got out.
And then of the current outbreaks, not the 2012 ones, the first three people infected were employees of the Wuhan lab. I mean, how hard is this to figure out?
No, they're saying that the thing was first identified. They actually kept it under wraps for like 8 years before it escaped. They didn't say it got out in 2012. Then they did all kinds of stuff by slamming the people in the open air market, and it was never them at all. You know, right. So I mean, one thing led to another. And once they implicated the Wuhan market, then of course they had to go all over those people and kill all their animals and stuff when they knew there wasn't them. I mean, it really is like a 5-year old.
Yeah.
And so what else, how's the feedback from the latest, issue with Amazon and stuff? You getting hate mail or what?
Well, we did get some negative mail, certainly far more positive. But, you know, that's what keeps us going, you know, is the negative mail. And not on any factual aspect. I always wish our any criticism, because we encourage feedback on every issue. If you go to luckboxmagazine.com right now, there's a reader survey, and it's on every issue. Tell us what you love, tell us what you hated, and, you know, that's generally how we proceed. But the hate mail would be focused on why are you picking on Amazon, with no argument associated with that, or you infactually pointed this out, or you didn't consider this perspective. That we don't get. You know, it's, you know, we'll get the equivalent of the Twitter trolls, you know, type of negative email. But the overall response has been really, really positive and honest to people recognizing, yeah, we know all this, but, you know, price and convenience are a hard draw, you know, and that if there were options, I think that's probably the most interesting thing, is that if there were options to Amazon, you know, we'd be using them more frequently, because we're aware of all the things that they do. I thought the most, and we'll, you know, jump onto other topics, but looking back and, you know, our editorial group and looked at the entire issue, and what I'm referring to is our latest Amazon-focused issue, which has maybe 10 or 12 stories about all the bad things that Amazon does in a lot of different categories. And that's free for everybody. It's at getluckbox.com. It's a digital issue, and you can pick it up just by registering there. And that's it. It's just an email, and you receive it. But I thought, looking back, that the most unique story as a result of our own reporting was the notion that the $72 billion of debt on Amazon's balance sheet right now is overwhelmingly funded by American small businesses. So here we have the one company that, more than any other company, if you're a point, what's the company responsible for decimating strip mall retail and America's small businesses and brick and mortar in general, it clearly would be Amazon. There's no close second to that question. And then if you ask the same question, where's the majority of debt financing for Amazon coming? It happens to be America's small businesses.
Oh, okay, wait, you gotta explain that.
45 to 60 day float on what they sell through the platform. Amazon doesn't pay them net 30. They're paying them closer to 45-60, and the irony that the second largest company in the world is financed on the backs, on the necks of America's small business, which they're systematically decimating, is really a hell of a story. So when we looked back at it and said, you know, we should have taken this further, that that was the story here, buried in all the stories that we had. That one story, a feature story that an editor at large, Garrett Baldwin, did, I thought was the most interesting. And then someone pointed out, well, every company has debt, and net 30, net 60, that's not unusual. But what is unusual is that a company that is just taking it to small business is surviving. Their balance sheet exists on the back of small business.
You gotta buy your own. You gotta buy your own noose.
Yeah. All right.
By the way, we're being hanged tomorrow. Give me $5 for the noose.
Yeah.
Right.
That's about right.
But I mean,
now,
in other news,
I thought it was important. I keep on watching these reports about, you know, what's going on in the States, and it's so interesting. You know, just anecdotally speaking to people this weekend that are moving, you know, just picking up and moving. And I saw the latest numbers. There's no surprise. The net losers of wealth and people were Illinois, New Jersey, New York, and California. The net winners were Nevada, North and South Carolina, Florida, Texas, and Arizona. Illinois in 2019 lost $6 billion of adjusted gross income, most in the country, of any other state.
Total or per person?
$6 billion adjusted gross income total.
Really?
In 1 year.
We lost more than New York? Total?
More, yes. That was the most in the country.
Wow.
And then they were the third most in terms of the amount of people moving out at 82,000 net.
Yeah, but didn't the one guy in Connecticut...
And they've lost every year since 2000. So 21 consecutive years they've lost AGI and population for 21 consecutive years.
Well, I'm pushing back just a hair here because you got the numbers and I don't, but didn't like a few people leave Connecticut and just a few people were more than that? The one guy was what? He was
I have Connecticut's numbers in front of me. I don't understand the context of that.
No, what I'm saying is it didn't... Who's the guy, man? We had somebody on the show I was talking about. One guy left Connecticut. I forget what the hell company he was. And he was like 8% of the some percentage of the whole taxation of the whole state.
I don't know. Where'd he go?
Florida or someplace.
Yeah, is he coming back?
I don't think so.
Can we get him on the show?
But I mean, I'm saying, is there a few... I remember reading these stories.
And it wasn't Kenny Polcari either.
No, but a few individual people left those states. And it was big time news because they were massive on their own.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm
sure you're right.
All I'm looking at is the data in front of me. It was 6.1 billion.
Wow.
AGI from Illinois and 82,000 people. That's net 2019 only. And then the four largest losing states were Illinois, New Jersey, New York, California, and of course the net gainer states were. So yeah, the one person leaving wasn't on my radar, but hey, that matters, you know. Particularly if we accept the notion that 10% of the people pay 50% of the taxes, right?
Well, who's the
company? So, yeah, that one person is a story.
Well, who's the company from Silicon Valley that's moving to Texas? They got to be more than a.
Well, there's a couple,
yeah, there's
but
a couple.
Obviously Musk, SpaceX.
Was it Google?
Tesla, right? Tesla's moving.
That's right.
To Texas.
I thought somebody else was thinking about it. That was, if they did, it would be like, God.
Yeah, I think so too, like Oracle or something.
Yeah, it was one
like
of those
that.
Places. Because, I mean, it's kind of, some of these people.
Those numbers are amazing because
yeah.
Because it's so real. I mean, we can debate about, progressive and regressive and Democratic and Republican tax policies, but then you see the numbers, clearly how they're affecting. And, boy, this is it's a real issue because it's going to create more inequality, and income inequality and regional inequality, and meanwhile, Florida is
in such
a role.
You always do your homework to a huge extent. I know a couple guys from the trading floor that I haven't talked to them in ages, but I hear rumors, whispers in the wind that they tried to move to Florida, but. To say that Illinois was sticky is an understatement. I mean, if you decide you're moving from Silicon Valley or Connecticut or Chicago to Tennessee, but a lot of your employees are still here and a lot of what you're doing is still here, they're not necessarily letting you go that easy, are they, in terms of your income tax you pay?
Yeah, I don't know. I believe my understanding is it's an IRS, that jurisdiction on domicile is an IRS issue, and it's defined by 6 months and 1 day. That's always been my understanding.
We should take a look at that, because I think they make it pretty hard for you.
Marbles writes it on Twitter and says David Tepper was the name you were looking for.
Yeah,
Tepper, hedge fund manager.
Good thing we have people listening. They have better memories than me. But no, we should talk about that next time, Jeff, because I think these states make it real tough for somebody to leave, especially if they leave their company here. Anyway, thanks, bud. When's the new issue? We got like no seconds.
Yeah, well, we'll be floating on Amazon, so right, nothing buddy. Till July.
So we have Mike tomorrow?
Yeah, well, you
that'll
do.
That'll be cool. All right, buddy, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures down 8. Back tomorrow.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early, Ellie.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.